Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune, Pastor Dusty White, and Chris Hemmelman of Coram Deo Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about the refugee crisis in Europe.
This is a topic that we have had some listeners ask about, so thanks for that, you guys who have emailed and asked us to tackle this. This week's podcast is being furthered by a couple of local beers, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
I'm enjoying a Third Stone Brown Ale from Empyrean Brewing Company, whereas you are enjoying a Lucky Bucket Snowsuit.
Yes, every drink feels like a nice warm Christmas hug.
You do like the snowsuit right about this time of year. My beer is courtesy of Ted Smith, who lost a bet to me on Nebraska's record this year.
Mm.
This is a good story, and I think our listeners need to know it. We had a staff retreat in August, and on the way back from that staff retreat, Ted and I were arguing about Nebraska football and whether the era of Mike Riley would be, you know, how it would compare. And so I made the brash prediction that Nebraska would not win more than 7 games this year, and Ted was so offended by that that he said he would bet me a 6-pack of beer on that. And so I took the bet, and I admit, when I took the bet, I wasn't confident that I was going to win, but apologies to you Husker fans. It hasn't been the best season, but this podcast is being sponsored by what I gained in that bet, and so I appreciate that.
It's also being sponsored by Dusty's large iPhone.
Yeah, Dusty got the iPhone Humongo version, apparently.
Yeah.
What do they call that version? The iPhone Plus?
The iPhone
Max?
Carry a backpack.
Did they give you a new charging cable? Because your charging cable has electrical tape on it.
It's fine. It's going to be fine.
You're going to start a fire somewhere.
No, it's fine.
Sooner or later, we're actually going to dive into the topic of this podcast. All right. Let's talk about the refugee crisis in Europe. Let me frame the conversation. There are, according to the UN High Commission on Refugees, at the end of 2014, there were 20 million refugees worldwide. Currently, I'm looking at Mercy Corps website. Mercy Corps is an agency that works with refugees all over the world. They say right now there are nearly 60 million refugees or displaced people worldwide. If all the world's refugees were the population of a country, it would be the 24th largest country in the world, just after Italy. And obviously, much of what we're hearing in current events news has to do with the Syrian refugee crisis. In the country of Syria, because of the civil war there, almost half the country's pre-war population has either been internally displaced or forced out of the country. And so there are about 4 million Syrian refugees who have poured into other countries. And of course, this is pressing serious questions in Europe, because many of those people are asking for asylum in various countries in Europe, and some countries are welcoming them, some aren't. Many of them are asking for asylum in the United States, and so this is even raising questions for our own country of will we or won't we receive refugees from Syria? And so this is in light of what's going on in the Middle East and the growth of ISIS and all the unrest and instability. This problem seems to be getting worse and worse. And if you've paid attention to the news and watched the images, man, there's some really hard, hard realities, just tough humanitarian concerns and issues as a result of this whole refugee crisis. And so we wanted to spend some time talking today about how do Christians need to think about this? What does our disposition need to be? What are the factors that come into the equation when we're asking about as complex an issue as immigration or refugees? And you were joking before we turned on the mics, Mike, that we probably in 25 minutes aren't going to solve the world's refugee crisis. So our goal here is certainly not to say everything that could be said on this, but just to give some rails and some guidelines for us to start thinking about this issue.
So here's the two sides of the issue. On the one hand, there's a call for compassion, that we as a society, we as Christians, need to show compassion for the refugee, for the sojourner, for the exile. And we see this in Scripture. There's a strong ethic in Scripture for this. On the other side of this is national security concerns. As the events in Paris showed us, that ISIS is exploiting this refugee crisis, which they've created, but also using it as a way to infiltrate European countries to conduct acts of terror. And so as free societies in a war against ISIS, what does that mean for us as we think through immigration and allowing refugees to come in? So we have to balance calls for compassion with wise national security policies. And Kevin DeYoung has a great article in which he sort of talks about the nuance between these two positions. And what is good about this article is that he's calling for thoughtful engagement of both sides. And so, yes, we need to show compassion, but what are the national security implications in this? And then also just acknowledging the fact that this is a complex issue. This is not just something that we can answer with simplistic appeals to one side or the other. And so he's calling for sort of that nuanced, thoughtful approach to what compassion looks like in the world we live in.
Well, if I can go further, Chris, this article that he wrote, which is posted on the Gospel Coalition on November 17th, so a week ago, he's taken to task a couple writers who wrote in other publications over the weekend, basically sort of leveraging the need for compassion. And he's essentially sort of taken them to task and saying, he basically says, I'm going to find the quote here, that this appeal to compassion can be simplistic. That it's reductionistic to say the only thing that matters here is compassion. Yes, compassion matters, but DeYoung is trying to bring a balance and say there are also major sort of geopolitical concerns that thoughtful Christians, especially in positions of power, Christians like who are in the government, need to weigh the questions of what are the risks nationally of allowing especially refugees from parts of the world where we know that there is a heavy ISIS presence. And so DeYoung's trying to bring some balance here and say, yep, lots of people, it's the sort of easy platitudinous thing to say as Christians, well, we need to have compassion toward refugees. Yes, we do. But he's also saying, and there are some bigger picture questions politically that need to be factored into the equation and that do matter.
Yeah, and I think what's super helpful to me in this and provocative in this article is he asked the question, is it unchristian to not want radical jihadists shooting people in our communities? And so there, he's building out that fear and compassion thing and saying, hey, the people you want to be compassionate to, in the very same line, there's probably jihadists hiding in that same line. And so he just helps us think critically here about the refugee crisis in general.
Yeah, I like his sentences here, I think are good. Says the answer is not as easy as fear versus compassion. Christian charity means loving the safety of the neighbor next door at least as much as loving the safe passage of the neighbor far away. And so there is this competing side that compassion and love are multifaceted. And so we can't reduce it to just it's one side. It's just showing compassion in this way. And so I think what Christians are pressing on and trying to think hard about, I really honestly think we're trying to work through this, is what are the lines by which we balance a strong sense of protection of a society and culture and our freedoms with welcoming those who have been legitimately victimized by terrorist murderers in their own country. And that line is not clearly blinking for all of us to see. I mean, it's complex and mistakes are going to abound. And so for us to think we're going to come up with this clean, neat policy and way of doing that is naive. And so we have to let's just address, this is complex. This is hard. We're not going to get this right, but let's be charitable on both sides as well.
So some of the challenge here, one of the ways I want to encourage our listeners to sort of apply the gospel here is to say one of the mistakes, and we were talking about this as a staff team the other day, guys, one of the mistakes I think it's easy for Christians to make is to only think of the personal ethic, right? So it's like, well, Jesus calls us to compassion. Jesus calls us to love our neighbor. Jesus calls us to take care of the weak and the powerless and the poor and the needy. Yes, yes, and yes. But those are all an ethic driven to a particular disciple or given to particular disciples of Christ. Those problems and challenges get more complex when we ask them at a societal level, right? So if I'm the president of the United States, what is now my Christian responsibility toward a million Syrian refugees who are asking for passage into the country? Is it okay to say we'll take 100,000 but not a million, or we'll take 10,000 but not 100,000? Is it okay to set limits and boundaries in, you know, how is it okay to have some framework for how to approach a question like that? Many Christians do a good job embracing the Bible's personal ethic, but don't ask the bigger question of, for instance, how do passages like Romans 13 or even like much of the Old Testament affect how we ought to think about these questions at a societal level? And that's the question that I think DeYoung is bringing up that is an important one, is to say, yeah, as Christians, we always want to be compassionate, but let's not reduce the complexity of an immigration crisis and just say, well, we should just let people in who are seeking refuge. Well, there, yes, at one level we should, but there's a whole host of questions that brings with it that Christians need to have a gospel lens for thinking through. And part of what we as individual Christians need to do is respect the fact that the gospel is more robust than just have compassion. It also gives us some categories by which to begin to think about a sort of national or state ethic, and those are just as important.
Yeah, and DeYoung quotes a First Things article written by a political science professor at Wheaton named Mark Amstutz. And he brings up two categories of thinking through immigration policy. One is the communitarian approach, and this is one that views national sovereignty of nation states as an important piece of immigration policy, and that any immigration policy must respect the coherence and stability of that society, because without that, then any sort of immigration policy is actually going to work against the cohesion of that nation state. And so it's actually in immigrants' favor that there is a level of protection within that society, because without that, they're not going to be able to thrive, and society's not going to be able to thrive. Mm-hmm. This is different in some ways to the cosmopolitan approach, which minimizes national sovereignty and kind of like you were saying, Bob, sort of takes a view of maybe the Sermon on the Mount and applies personal ethic statewide. And so it's much more open. It's people are more important than sort of a government system or a societal system. And so it's much, much more loose with the amount of immigration or refugees coming in. And so while there's a good value there that people matter and we need to care for people, there might be a sense of a naive perspective on the effect that can have on a society. So that's another piece too, I think, and just in thinking through the immigration policy is, man, we want to have a society that's going to help immigrants thrive, and we want to have a society that is welcoming and can support them. And so how do we do that and do that well?
Well, it's interesting that article in First Things that you mentioned, Chris, summarizes the cosmopolitan approach to immigration as viewing the world as a coherent global society united by the simple fact of our common humanity, and often regarding the nation state as an impediment to international justice. And so I think this is espoused by many on sort of what we would consider the liberal side of the spectrum, would be sort of like there's an emphasis on the commonality of humanity, and that any nation state and sort of local sovereignty is an impediment to justice versus a help to justice. But the communitarian point of view is no. The solidarity of a nation state is important to its ability to actually provide a place of peace. So the simplest argument, I think, for the communitarian approach is look at Syria versus the United States of America, right? Syria's in a civil war, massive social and political unrest, and as a result, it's not a safe place for people to live. Where do they all want to go? They want to go to France. They want to go to Italy. They want to go to the United States. They want to go to Belgium. They want to go to countries that have stability at the nation state level and can provide through a tax structure, through a governmental structure, through policing, through, you know, a stable society, a flourishing and healthy place for them to actually land and build a new life. And so I think there is much to say for the communitarian approach that says there is a role for the nation state to play in providing a stable environment for human flourishing. And if that's true, that means that each nation state has to assess what willingness it has to welcome in refugees and what its policies will be toward that. And that's not necessarily an unloving thing to do. In fact, it might be very loving to ask how many refugees can we take in and still create the kind of stable society that we think needs to exist for everyone to flourish.
You could put this on a personal level to sort of use an analogy. If I have a family and I have a stable structure and I'm welcoming in maybe foster kids or adopting, there's limits to what I can do in order to keep the stability necessary to help those I'm welcoming in. And so if you think of that on a societal level as well, we don't want to destabilize the very thing that's going to help those we're welcoming in. And so I think that's a strong argument for thoughtful immigration, thoughtful refugee policy. And I think if you compare the United States to what's going on in Europe now, it seems the United States has adopted a more communitarian approach where the countries in Europe, it's much more cosmopolitan. And that's why there's just this flood, overwhelming flood, where in the United States, the process is much slower. I was reading somewhere it's upwards of a year or over a year that people have to go through just a number of checks to come in. But we're also not facing a crisis at this point. We're not being flooded and overwhelmed. And so there's still stability in this approach. So I think you can, in a number of ways, you can see the strength of the communitarian approach.
Well, and it's interesting to talk now about the other side, right? What many of these writers and pundits are arguing against is that in Europe, especially in response to the bombings in Paris a few weeks ago, there's sort of a fear-based response that basically says, well, any Middle Easterner is a threat. So let's just shut, you know, the easiest way to solve the problem is shut the borders and don't let any Middle Eastern refugees in. That way we don't end up with any ISIS militants. Obviously, that's an overly simplistic approach because America, you know, on 9/11 ended up with terrorists, you know, flying on planes. And it wasn't because we let them in through immigration policy. It was they found their way here through other means. So I don't think that a particularly strict immigration policy solves the problem of terrorism. It certainly does not. And it probably disadvantages the many because of the sins of the few. And I don't think that's the right way to go about it. So we don't want to have a fear-based strategy that says, well, because of the risk of terrorism, therefore we shouldn't love our Middle Eastern neighbor. But I think the reality is, however, because of the risk of terrorism, certainly we should have some checks and balances and boundaries in place if we are going to accept in Middle Eastern refugees. And so there is this interesting balancing act here between not giving in to fear and not assuming that anyone who has a Muslim or a Middle Eastern background is a terrorist, but also being wise in how we go about welcoming in refugees and in the checks and balances that we may make them walk through in order, or the checks and I don't know, checks and balances isn't the right word. That's like a balance of powers word, but the checks and the checkpoints that we make them walk through in order to convince us that they could reasonably resettle.
So a lot of people are going to Deuteronomy 10 when they're making their case for loving the sojourn, being welcoming, giving them food and clothing and a place to stay. Is there a context that we need to understand when we look at this passage? Was this a personal instruction, or was this a nationwide governmental instruction?
That's a really good question, Mike. Asking about the context of that passage. Yeah, I think if you look at the context of that passage, if you consider the context of the Old Testament, I think you're going to find another argument for the communitarian approach. I mean, there was a sense where God called Israel to show compassion to the sojourner. And he reminds them, remember, at one time you were exiles, you were sojourners because of what happened to you in Egypt. And so there's this ethic based on their own experience of God's grace to them that they were to show grace to another. But what was always out front of Israel as it related to other nations? Don't adopt the practices of the other people. There wasn't to be this overwhelming mix. And again, you can start talking in those terms and there's like undertones of is this racist and this, you know, this and that. No, it had to do with the fact that if Israel began to mix with the peoples of the world, they began to adopt their pagan practices. It pulled them away from worship of Yahweh. So there was always this sense that Israel was to guard their culture, their society, the stability of themselves as a nation, because they were the people of God. And any destabilizing of that would pull them away from worshiping Yahweh. And we see this happen. So there's a balance of both welcoming the sojourner, but also protecting the stability of their nation.
So to sort of tie a bow on the conversation, I think what we're longing for from wise, thoughtful Christian listeners is, number one, to pray for peace and for God's help for these refugees. Because the reality is no one nation can solve this problem, right? There's 4 million Syrians asking for passage to other nations. No one country is going to be the solution. It's going to take a multitude of world powers coming together to solve that problem. And so that means that no amount of Christians, you know, berating the U.S. government is even going to solve that. Even if the U.S. welcomed in 1 million of those, there's still 3 million left. And so we as Christians need to see this as a call to get on our knees and to pray for God to work in this situation and to work through sovereign nation states and through sort of the global geopolitical economy to bring resolution to this. Secondly, we do need to embrace compassion, and I think we need to reject fear. We need to reject the sense that, gosh, if we let refugees in, it's going to mean terror and it's going to mean mayhem. That's not necessarily true, nor would it be right for Christians to relate to people based on where they're from in the world as though they're more or less dangerous, right? We all know that the white guy living next door might be just as dangerous to you as the Middle Eastern guy living down the street. And yet, at the same time, I think Kevin DeYoung's article and the point he's making in that First Things article that we talked about raises the need for Christians to recognize that the gospel doesn't just apply to us personally, but it has implications for how we run nation states. And so having a wise boundary or some criteria for refugees is not unloving. It's not unkind. It's not ungodly. It is, in fact, wise and coherent and moral. And so it in itself creates a safe context in which we can welcome in the outsider. And so let's not pit welcoming refugees against, you know, having policies and saying no. Let's embrace both of those and realize that as Christians, for our voice to be heard with intelligence, we're going to have to be a voice for compassion and for caring about those who have been displaced. And also a voice for wisdom and a voice that says it's okay for states and for national governments to implement some sort of policy for how they're going to handle this. And we want to have a voice into that policy. We want to pray for leaders in Christian leaders who are in government or Christian leaders that have influence on those leaders to come up with wise policies here that that protect and care about the good of those who are already here, as well as opening up opportunity for others to come. I think it'd be appropriate to leave with these final two sentences from Kevin DeYoung. My plea is that the conversation reflect the complexity of the situation and go beyond the familiar dichotomies of love versus hate, inclusion versus exclusion, and fear versus compassion. There are too many important things and too many human lives at stake to move quite so quickly from solid Christian principles to simple policy prescriptions. I think that's a wise and thoughtful way of summarizing the conversation.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that the things that we've talked about today might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. Please join the conversation by tweeting us at Coramdeo Omaha, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday on the Wednesday Conversation.